This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. A new generation of philanthropists is shaking up the usually staid world of scientific research. They are people who made fortunes in technology companies such as Microsoft and Oracle, and they're applying some tactics from those businesses to their philanthropic ventures. NPR's John Hamilton reports.
Rockefeller and Carnegie oversaw their scientific charity from a distance. Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, prefers to get up close, even if it means traveling to a malaria clinic in Mozambique.
Right, so 349, but which anti-malarial are you using?
It's 12 months of each.
Gates is quizzing Dr. Xavier Gomez Olive, a researcher at the clinic. Gates wants to know which drug children are getting to prevent malaria.
But which drugs are you giving?
SP. For the chimpanzees.
So for the infants, just SP.
Yes. Okay.
Gates and his wife Melinda also have brought good news to the doctors in Mozambique.
Today we're announcing three grants, all focused on malaria. The first is a prevention strategy that's being applied here.
The grants come to $168 million. That's a huge sum for malaria, which gets very little research funding from traditional sources. Gates saw this as one niche where his money could make a difference. There are many others, and he's constantly on the lookout for new projects for his foundation.
Bill is an email away at all times. Melinda is an email away.
Patty Stonecipher left her job as an executive at Microsoft to become president of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The foundation has an endowment worth about $24 billion and supports a wide range of activities, including international health reporting at NPR. Stonecipher says the foundation's officers don't waste time when evaluating a new project.
We can make decisions very rapidly, there's no doubt about that. But we do use a process that brings in external advisors in order to make sure that even rapid decisions have a broad view of the field that's out there so that we end up working with the best solutions possible.
Even so, the process is a far cry from, say, the National Institutes of Health, where decisions can take months or years, and where grants tend to go to experiments almost certain to succeed. It's also far more streamlined than the process at some traditional foundations, where large edifices house even larger bureaucracies. Bill Gates isn't alone in trying to use his billions to turbocharge the conservative world of scientific research. Larry Ellison helped start the software company Oracle. In 1998, he created a foundation to fund basic research on aging. Specifically, he wanted to investigate telomeres, chunks of DNA that may one day help scientists slow aging or stop cancer. So Ellison turned to Richard Sprott at the National Institutes of Health, an expert on telomeres. Sprott says he moved over to Ellison's foundation to speed up the research.
It was difficult to do in the NIH environment because it's very, very high risk. And Larry Ellison made his money taking risk. He understands and enjoys risk.
Ellison now spends $20 million a year on aging research. Sprott says there's growing excitement about an enzyme called telomerase that acts as a sort of switch for telomeres. He says learning how to turn on telomerase might let scientists rejuvenate aging cells.
On the other hand, if you could find out how to selectively turn off telomerase in cancer cells, you'd have a silver bullet to cure a wide, wide array of cancers. And I think that's actually probably likely in the relatively near future.
A huge potential payoff for the big risk. Sprott says Ellison's business style also makes him think globally. So it's not surprising that he's also funding research on parasites and infectious diseases that afflict people in developing nations.
Larry genuinely wants to make a difference to people, and it doesn't, I'm not saying American people, and we're looking for the places where, for the kind of money we're talking about, you can have the greatest impact. And in many cases, that means things that are outside the U.S.
Many older foundations dispense their largesse from grand buildings filled with expensive art. Like universities, they often give senior staff jobs for life. The Ellison Medical Foundation operates out of a small, unassuming office near Washington, D.C. The walls are covered with nature photographs that Sprott took himself. He says the foundation has no endowment, which means its future rests on Ellison's willingness to write the next check.
This job could disappear tomorrow, and I'm very happy with that, because what comes with it is this opportunity to be more entrepreneurial and to do exciting kind of stuff, and either win or fail.
This new style of philanthropy can be a radically different experience for scientists accustomed to traditional funding sources. Diane Griffin is a researcher at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. She's got part of a $40 million grant from the Gates Foundation to develop a measles vaccine for infants. Children can't be given the current vaccine until they're at least 9 months old, which is one reason hundreds of thousands of babies still die of measles in developing countries. Some of Griffin's team members work in a lab at the Bloomberg School of Public Health.
This is the measles empire, right, so to speak. That's right. And then we, I have another similar lab that's on the other wing that where we look at viral encephalitis.
Griffin applied for the grant after a series of emails with the Gates Foundation.
It was a different kind of application for the kind of thing that, we often do in that it had a goal, a targeted goal of a product to develop and a timeline to try to develop that product.
The goal is an ambitious one, to have a vaccine ready to try in people within 5 years. Griffin says government funding helped start the project, but it will be the Gates grant that makes the vaccine a reality.
Frankly, I don't think it would happen without Gates. I mean, you know, we would have some, you know, little bit of data here and there, but we wouldn't have had the resources, I don't think, ever to actually test the different doses and all the different kinds of things you have to do in order to be able to actually move something toward a field trial.
The new philanthropists bring more than different expectations to scientific research. They also share a set of beliefs, one of which is that technology can solve almost any problem. That includes what many consider the greatest problem in all of biology, how the human brain actually functions. Paul Allen is a co-founder of Microsoft.
The human brain works in so far mysterious and wondrous ways that are completely different than the ways computers function, the way that computers calculate. That's an intellectual question, the scientific question that's fascinated people from time immemorial.
So Allen, a man made rich by computer code, has set out to crack the brain's genetic code. Inspired by technology used to complete the Human Genome Project, he's spending $100 million to launch the Allen Institute for Brain Science in Seattle. Allen plans to compile a vast database of all 30,000 genes in the brain and what they do. The goal is to solve some of the brain's greatest mysteries.
How is the brain built from such a small number of genes? That's a fascinating intellectual question. Then you get into questions of disease and how different kinds of disease can be treated based on these genes. And then how do things like appetite or emotion, how do those function in the brain? And this database will give us, hopefully, better insight into all those questions.
Allen says he'll make that database available for free on the Internet. It's too soon to say whether the new scientific philanthropies will produce more successes more quickly than their predecessors. In the meantime, some traditional institutions are starting to question their conservative approach to science. The National Institutes of Health, for example, has just announced a plan to accelerate research and take on riskier projects. John Hamilton, NPR News.